Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome in to the College Football Game Time Podcast. I'm Chris Goforth. College Football Game Time Podcast brought to you by ESOG Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs. And that is exactly what we're going to be talking about today as we welcome in Brandon Adams. Brandon joins us from Dog Nation Daily. Fantastic podcast every single day covering Georgia football. Brandon, appreciate you give us some time. Maybe not necessarily the best of circumstances for Georgia fans as we talk a little bit about kind of the state of this program right now, coming off that loss to Florida on Saturday. For as disappointing as that loss was, where does Georgia go from here? What's next?
Yeah, I think it's Dogs. I think it's a great question because, as you said, it was a disappointing loss for a couple of reasons. First of all, Florida is one of the program's biggest rivals. I would say it is the biggest rival. So there's the emotional part of it. But there's also the measuring stick part of it as well. You know, Florida has been the next best team in the SEC East, trying to get to the level where Georgia has been. And Georgia's lead over Florida, the gap that Georgia's enjoyed, is kind of a nice luxury the program has had going for it. And now that it's been flipped over here, now that Florida's looking to be the top team in the SEC East, I think it does leave Georgia with a lot of questions, and it's really on both sides of the ball. You can look at the quarterback situation. Obviously, that's ongoing, even as we head towards what we hope is a game against Missouri on Saturday, a chance to kind of find out, does Georgia have a quarterback on this roster that's a potential starter for next season that could warrant playing time and give Georgia some better play there? That's obviously still very much an unanswered question. But then defensively, even with all the injuries that Georgia suffered on Saturday, it's another example like the Alabama game a couple weeks before that, the LSU game in last year's SEC championship, where when Georgia has faced these elite offenses, the defense had a hard time keeping pace. No one would question the talent that Georgia has defensively. I don't think anyone would say that Georgia's not a very good, if not great, defense. No one questions that. I think the question is, how much does that really matter in 2020 when so much of the sport now is about high-powered offenses? Pretty clearly, Georgia doesn't quite have that same program makeup right now. Florida probably has a little bit more of that. I think a lot of folks would point to that and say that's one of the reasons why Florida won on Saturday.
You had a comment this week, something you said this week on Dog Nation Daily, and I want to go back to that because it caught my ears when you said it. Before that, though, I want to go back to something you just said, which takes us back again to Saturday. Mm-hmm. Has Florida caught Georgia? Have they passed Georgia in that SEC East pecking order now? Or do you view what happened Saturday just kind of a sort of a one-time thing?
So what I said coming into the game, and I really said this for a number of months, is that the prevailing narrative around both programs, Georgia and Florida, would have a hard time surviving beyond this year's game for the loser. I mean, you know, Georgia had been comforted by the fact that it had better players than Florida. It's out recruited Florida by a wide margin for a number of years. I think there was a belief that as long as Georgia had that talent advantage, that Kirby Smart would remain somewhat bulletproof against Dan Mullen. On the other side of that, there was the belief at Florida that Dan Mullen was a better game coach, in particular, a better offensive mastermind. He may have lesser talent, but he'll coach those guys up on game day, and he'll have a chance to surpass George and Kirby Smart that way. Now, given the fact that those were the two narratives, had Florida lost, I think it would have been worse for Mullen because I think it would have been easier to ask, well, if you couldn't beat him this year when you had the more experienced quarterback, when you had all these things seemingly going for you, when are you ever going to do that? It would have been more fatalistic had Florida lost in this particular game. Georgia losing, I don't think, is fatalistic in the same way. It does open up a lot of unpleasant conversations, but it's certainly not an indication that things have changed forever. They're just this way for now. Now, Georgia's got a lot of work to do to win a game like this a year from now or in the future, but there's really no indication that there may be program regression this year, but there's no indication that's some sort of permanent sense for the program if Georgia does the things that it needs to do to kind of take that next step to what I would view as kind of rebuilding itself in some ways.
Well, that kind of leads me right where I wanted to go next, Brandon, because I've got my AirPods in this morning. I'm pounding the pavement through the neighborhood on my morning walk and listening to Dog Nation Daily. I can't remember if it was yesterday.
Well, first of all, thank you for that. First of all, I appreciate that.
You had the comment and you said Georgia is a broken program. What did you mean by that when you say that it's broken and it needs to be fixed?
Well, certainly it's not to say that Georgia is not a good team anymore or not a potential championship contender in the future, but there is a program makeup that Georgia has had that's not working right now. Georgia has tried to win a national championship over the last couple of years with a lot of defense, a lot of running game, very good offensive line, and just enough passing game, just enough quarterback. And that program identity is not really working. That makeup, that construction of the program, I would say is kind of broken. It needs to be rebuilt to look a little bit more like what LSU had a year ago, or a little bit like what Alabama has seemingly year in, year out now, where it's a lot of high-powered offense and just enough defense. I would say that Clemson's kind of that way too. Now, Clemson has been very good defensively in its national championship era, but the defense hasn't been the number one reason why Clemson's won those games, you know, won those championships. It's been because of the quarterback play. It's been because of the wide receiver play. And that's just kind of the inverse of the way that Georgia's built. So as Georgia looks to kind of reboot itself and get ready for, you know, the end of the 2020 season, obviously, but more importantly, being ready for 2021, what we hope is a lot more normal looking year, refashioning the program so that, you know, it gets the most out of its talent defensively to be impactful in a game like this. But most importantly, finding the level of offense needed to keep pace. And I mean, all these games amongst the top teams kind of all look the same now. It's all about, you know, how well you play quarterback, how well you can strike offensively. They're a lot like the best NFL games that you see now. And I think that's become a lot more of a passing league. So the broken nature of Georgia is the fact that it doesn't closely resemble the very best teams in the country. And that's the job, I would say, of Kirby Smart over the course of the next however many months to really work on just kind of getting that fixed. And he may have the pieces. I would say that Todd Monken's probably a good offensive coordinator. Certainly some of the returning pieces offensively give you a chance to do that. But this is kind of a long time coming in terms of Georgia identifying where it has been and what it needs to be different to get to where it wants to go.
Is the right word blame when you look at Kirby Smart for kind of the, because what you're laying out for how Georgia is built right now, Brandon, is the way you won a national championship 10 years ago. It's how you won a national championship 15 years ago. As you said, that's not the way you do it in 2020 now. So, is it blame that you lay at Kirby Smart now?
So I want to answer that question, but I want to make sure I touch on something else you just said there too, which is you're right that the model that you would look at for Georgia is kind of what it would be like 10 years ago. But in fairness to Kirby here, it did almost work in 2017. Georgia did not throw the ball much in 2017. They had a freshman quarterback. They were very careful with how they used him. And they came within an eyelash of beating Alabama, winning the national championship. So Kirby could be forgiven if he listens to a conversation like this and says, hey, I was just there a couple of years ago and I almost won the thing. So therefore, it's not all ancient history. And, you know, even in the playoff era, we had Jacob Coker win one in 2015. You know, there are examples of not just Hall of Fame, Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, you know, Tua Tagovailoa level quarterbacks who've kind of gotten this done. But the prevailing wisdom is the sport has changed a good bit, and therefore that Georgia does need to modernize itself. And as far as does Kirby Smart take the blame for that, blame can be kind of a loaded word. I'm more comfortable saying it this way. the quarterback situation at Georgia is not something that happened to the program. It's something that Georgia created because of the decisions, Kirby in particular, over the course of the last couple of years. Somehow, some way, they had Justin Fields and didn't use him. Somehow, some way, they created an offense around Jake Fromm in his junior season where he said at the end of the year, hey, maybe I'm just better off to go try my hand at the NFL as opposed to coming back for a senior season. They had Jamie Newman, and who knows how good Jamie Newman would have been playing for Georgia, but they had him, and then he chose to opt out for whatever, you know, reason he chose to opt out. That this quarterback situation, what Georgia has kind of reaped over the course of the last 2 years, it is certainly sowing right now, if I'm using that analogy correctly. Maybe it's the opposite words. But the point is, this is something that has, you know, not happened to Georgia. It is something that Kirby Smart has created. However, I don't think there'd anybody be more equipped than Kirby, the energy that he brings to the table, the you know, the coaching success that he's had. I don't think there's anyone more equipped than him to fix it, but it has certainly gotten kind of broken on his watch. And I won't deny that part of it either.
24/7 Sports, their composite rankings coming into the season said Georgia was the most talented team in the country. You look now, coming off this loss to Florida, is this a lost year for the Dogs?
Well, I certainly can kind of feel that way. And as far as the talent part of this goes, here's the thing that I think could be a little bit frustrating for people who follow Georgia closely, who do follow these recruiting rankings really closely, which is that there's a big imbalance. Georgia's probably recruited certain defensive positions, and I'm not overstating this, literally as well as anyone ever has. With the huge collection of outside linebacker talent, they've gotten better with their defensive line recruitment. They've recruited, you know, defensive backs really well. Some of their defensive recruiting has really bordered on kind of legendary talent acquisition. Offensively, they have really lagged behind in a couple of key areas. Not really running back. For the most part, they've kind of gotten the backs they've wanted. They did have a couple high-profile misses, but for the most part, they've gotten the running backs they've wanted. They've really done extraordinarily well with the offensive line, but in particular, the wide receiver position. You know, if you want to look prior to the 2019 class, go back and look at Kirby's first three classes, 16, 17, 18. For the most part, Georgia was recruiting kind of a low four-star player who might be rated in the top 200, top 250, top 300 in the country. But these were not the elite players, the best of the best. And so some of the struggles that Georgia is having offensively, even though, as you said, 24/7 would rank the program overall as most talented team in the country, only until recently has any of that talent really been at the receiver position. In 19, they pulled in Dominic Blaylock, who was a top 50 player. George Pickens was a true five-star. Last year, that they signed, I think, three top 100 wide receivers. You can check my math on that. So all of a sudden, now they're getting better overall talent in the receiver position. But for as good as Georgia had been from a recruiting standpoint, they'd actually kind of lagged behind a little bit at the receiver spot. And that's why that position group, I would say, has struggled here over the course of the last couple of years. And then on the defensive side, where they've had so many of these five stars, I think the next step for Kirby is, and this is going to be fodder for negative recruiting if it doesn't happen, you got to take some of those guys and now you got to transform them into first round, second round picks, you know, guys that dominate at the college level. Almost any player that you want to point to as kind of the five-star variety of Georgia, if you said, is that a good player? I would say, yes, that's a good player. That's a guy that Georgia's really glad to have. But it's not Derek Stingley at LSU yet. It's not what Chase Young was at Ohio State, the kind of, you know, guy that you and I sit in Atlanta know exactly who they are, their household names, their superstar-type players. Unfortunately, as of yet, Georgia hasn't kind of found that next superstar. DeAndre Baker was. He won the Thorpe Award. Before that, Roquan Smith was. He won the Butkus Award. But that elite crop of talent since then, you haven't seen that individual name really blossom yet. And so even for as talented as the Georgia defense is, I think you've got to have some big names emerge, and you better turn some of these five stars into first-round picks, or otherwise that well's going to run. I don't want to say it's going to run dry, but certainly the flow is going to slow down a little bit.
Brandon, I get the feeling, because there's so much talk and so much emphasis on the quarterback position, that a lot of people feel like, hey, fix the quarterback and you fix the problem. Is it that simple at Georgia?
I would say that certainly that is a good first step. But I think, you know, even beyond that offensively, you know, as I said before, you know, you've still got to figure out what you've got going on from a wide receiver standpoint. I think they're still trying to decide what their true identity is, because there's a little bit of an identity crisis that emerges on Saturday where you know, Georgia has the big Zamir White touchdown run to begin the game. And then Zamir White ends up averaging 10 yards per carry on a limited number of carries on Saturday. Georgia kind of abandoned the run. Now, on one school of thought, well, you abandon the run because Florida's stacking the box. They're daring you to throw it, and you're not really capable of doing that. So on the one hand, you can kind of be forgiven for that. But on the other hand, there are a lot of Georgia fans who say, hey, I still want Georgia football to include a heavy dose of running the football. That's the way that you win in the SEC. So to answer your question, yes, if you could just figure out quarterback, because quarterbacks are kind of an eraser anyway. A lot of these teams recently that have had, you know, great quarterbacks, we don't really pay attention to the fact. I mean, look at all the yards and points that LSU gave up to Vanderbilt last year, Ole Miss last year. There were some days in which the LSU defense didn't play really well at all, but they had Joe Burrow. They were scoring 50 points, so nobody really noticed. So quarterbacks have a way of kind of erasing some problems. For Georgia, the same thing would be true. But even beyond quarterback, as you transition to the Todd Monken era, a guy who is an air raid specialist, a guy who probably does want to throw the football a lot, you know, how much of that means that you're not going to be effective running the ball until you've established the pass in any particular game. So I would say, in addition to the search for quarterback, there's also a little bit of an identity crisis going on, but not the kind of thing that couldn't be fixed by a nice full football calendar, a spring practice next year, a deeper crop of quarterbacks to compete with. You know, most of these things are fixable problems for Georgia, but they do exist as problems now.
So does it matter with the way this roster's constructed right now, does it really matter who takes the snaps on Saturday against Missouri?
Well, from one school of thought, probably not. But the other school of thought is there's just a ton of curiosity about JT Daniels, because he's the one guy that does have some credentials in this quarterback room at the moment. He was the starter at USC, and he was number three player in the country, or at least number three quarterback in the country for the class of 2018. This was a big-time guy. Now, he's also a guy that had a, I would say, shaky year starting at USC in 2018 and was injured to begin the 2019 season. So he doesn't come to Georgia without, you know, some, I don't want to say it's baggage necessarily, but there's some mitigating factors that probably was the reason why he chose to transfer anyway. So it matters from the sense that Georgia fans just want to see what JT Daniels is all about. And really, even though Kirby remains incredibly popular with the lion's share of Georgia fans, this is one element where you do see a little bit of frustration of, why is he being so stubborn and not playing this guy at all and continuing to say that both Bennett, potentially Mathis, give Georgia a better chance to win when both guys have had their moments when they've really, really struggled. So what matters is Georgia fans are just dying to find out what they have, if anything, in JT Daniels. So that's the full extent of Georgia fans' interest in the game against Missouri on Saturday.
Hey, let's expound on the JT Daniels thing here for just a minute, because it sounds like, and I think Kirby said this last week, maybe it was even in his post-game comments, it's not the injury that's keeping JT Daniels off the field, right?
Well, Kirby has a way of toggling back and forth with, it's not injury-related, this is the guy that gives the best chance of win, and then it turns into, well, his mobility is getting better and better. So it kind of depends on which day that you catch Kirby in terms of how much he even references the knee as the reason why he's not playing. But by and large, what you're saying is true, which is that, it, like they say in hockey, it's a DNP CD. It's a did not play coach's decision for the most part for what has kept JT Daniels on the bench. That's obviously an eye-opening thing. And it opens up a controversy for Georgia fans, because there are some who will say, well, the same coach that told me that Justin Fields wasn't good enough to play, and now Justin Fields is, you know, on the shortest of short lists to win the Heisman Trophy, now he tells me that JT Daniels is not good enough to play. Are we sure that Kirby Smart really knows how to evaluate these quarterbacks? That's a common refrain that you hear from some fans. So it is an unorthodox decision not to play Daniels at all, and it's one that is pretty controversial with Georgia fans, because just given how meager the results have been for the quarterbacks, I think a lot of Georgia fans say, how could Daniels be any worse than this? And, you know, what is it about him that makes you not, or what is it about you that makes you not want to play him at all?
You're as dialed in as anybody as there is, Brandon, around the Georgia program. What have you heard about practice and what folks have seen from JT Daniels?
Well, I don't think they've seen very much at all as of late. I mean, he has not been taking those number one reps. He's been working more as like a third team quarterback when the third team quarterback would get reps, or working as a scout team quarterback. And Kirby Smart said this week that it's really Daniels volunteering to go be that scout team quarterback. But as you know, that's not a real practice rep because you're running someone else's offense. And as Kirby's explained, you're also supposed to be a gunslinger when you're a scout team quarterback. In other words, there's no punishment. There's no penalty for throwing an interception. You're trying to be as aggressive as possible to give the defense a good look. So I think that we've been in a scenario where JT Daniels has not really been evaluated as potential starter really at all since the season began for the most part. I think that his evaluation took place during the summer months. And I can tell you that the third scrimmage, the final one before the start of the season, this is something a lot of donors got a chance to see. And in a scrimmage like that, Daniels played very little. He played some in a situational role, you know, third and short or third and long or goal line, things like that. But in the regular good on good portion of the scrimmage, he wasn't playing at all, which would lead you to believe at that time, Daniels wasn't quite healthy, I guess. And how does that then work in concert with Kirby Smart says we evaluated them and that's why he's on the bench right now? I think there's a lot of this kind of stuff when you try to start adding the pieces together, they don't all quite fit together perfectly. I guess the simplest way to say all this, and if I had to assume what was true, it might be this, that Daniels has been hurt and maybe to some degree that growth and development with the injured knee has slowed down his progress as a player, that he's just maybe at the beginning of the season less ready to play than he would have been had he been fully healthy. And now that he is fully healthy, he's just kind of working, you know, to be ready to contribute for Georgia. If he wasn't healthy enough to play in games, maybe he wasn't healthy enough to practice as well as you would like for him to. As I said before, I know from eyewitness accounts in that third scrimmage, he wasn't very involved there. So all of this is a mystery that you're taking a piece of this and a piece of that. You're trying to add it together. And Smart is intentionally, I want to say deceptive on this, but he certainly likes the secrecy element of all of that. So he's not going to do you any favors in terms of trying to allow you to figure out quite what's going on here.
So tell me about Brock Vandergriff, the 2021 quarterback commit for Georgia. Can he be a difference maker in the fall of 21?
Well, the one thing I'll tell your audience is don't treat me like a scout. I don't pretend to be one. But when Vandergriff was on national television a couple of months ago, I really liked what I saw from him. Now, his team was playing against Raven County. That's Gunnar Stockton, the quarterback who's at least for now going to South Carolina. Who knows if he maintains that commitment given how the Gamecocks are playing. But Raven County is a much better team, so they're dominating the game. I think some people were left to think, well, I guess Vandergriff had a poor showing on national television. The truth is, what I saw from Vandergriff, I really kind of liked. He throws on the run. I think, you know, he threw a couple bullet passes that maybe could have been caught, but he's playing with a level of receiver that maybe not going to quite catch some of those balls. I think he's a real live, legitimate prospect. I think that this is the kind of quarterback that, given the struggles that Georgia's had at the position, if he wasn't from the Athens area, I think Georgia would have a hard time finding this level of quarterback right now somewhere else in the country. This is just one of those fortunate things where an elite quarterback prospect does happen to be in Georgia's backyard, and therefore it's kind of all worked out. At one point in time, he's an Oklahoma commit. Lincoln Riley really only takes the best of the best when it comes to quarterbacks, so that's a little bit of a validation there. I think if you're Georgia, though, you don't love the idea of, hey, this is the only guy that can be the quarterback next season, because, you know, that's asking a lot from a guy that's an incoming freshman. You know, look at the way that Trevor Lawrence took the Clemson job. You know, it's, you know, a situation where he gets to grow into that role from Kelly Bryant. You know, prior to that, Deshaun Watson gets to grow into that role over the course of his freshman season with Cole Stout there prior to that. So between a Mathis or between a JT Daniels, or maybe Dan Daniels finally gets healthy, maybe he becomes the guy that's, you know, that's that player the rest of the his time at Georgia. But one way or another, you'd love to have a veteran presence emerge for Georgia so that if Vandergriff is the real deal, he has someone to overtake for the job, as opposed to the notion that you have to put him out there as a quarterback by default. That's a lot more similar to some of the stuff that Georgia dealt with this season. I don't think any fan wants to revisit that anytime soon.
Yeah. Do you expect Georgia to search the transfer portal for a quarterback?
Yeah, I guess I probably do. I mean, I think in this day and age, every program is going to be doing that, I think. And, you know, I guess you'll be left to determine if that's a good thing or not, given the fact that Jamie Newman came in, stayed for a couple minutes and then left. And then who knows what's going on with JT Daniels. I mean, I would say that the transfer portal door could swing both ways. Almost certainly someone could leave Georgia this year because he doesn't feel like he's playing enough, and you couldn't really fault him if he did feel that way. And that could be true for any number of quarterbacks. And Georgia probably still looking to take that veteran guy if it can as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is true for two reasons. First of all, that's just what you do at quarterback now. But also with the way in which the transfer rules are about to get a lot more liberal and seem like the SEC they kind of already have, then I think that Kirby Smart's going to try to use every mechanism he can to make the roster as talented as it possibly can be. So I would say that Georgia's still in play for transfer quarterbacks. Again, especially if you read into some of this to say that maybe Georgia doesn't love everything that it has in JT Daniels.
Brandon, last question, and then we'll let you go. Appreciate you spending some time with us. Look, there's still a lot of football left to be played for Georgia. I think the worst thing you can do is allow Florida to beat you twice and lay an egg against Missouri. What do you feel like is the mental state of this Georgia football team right now?
I think that's what we're going to find out. You know, you've got a couple of different examples of this. If you want to go back and look at the last two Sugar Bowls, where Georgia was not really ready to play the game against Texas 2 years ago. Texas is a pretty good team. Texas could have beaten Georgia even if it was, you know, fully focused and ready to go. But it seemed like Georgia just had a weird edge to it about that game. There were a lot of opt-outs before last year's game against Baylor, but Georgia did play better, at least, with the talent they had at its disposal against the Bears last season. So you could read into that what you want to a little bit. It seems like they're all trying to say the right things here this week, but this is to a degree uncharted territory. I will say, from someone who's curious to see what Georgia does, I almost wish they were playing at least one more game against a slightly better team before the year is done. The game on Saturday against Missouri is by far and away their toughest remaining game, and Georgia's still like an 11.5-point favorite, at least in a lot of the online, you know, spots. 11.5-point favorite against Missouri. After that, it's Mississippi State, who is just awful right now. Vanderbilt, who's not really in an SEC team at this point, assuming they're even still playing football by then. And South Carolina in the mix there too. And that's a revenge game because Gamecocks beat Georgia last season. But I think there's two things going on here. There's a need for Georgia to maintain its level of focus. And against Missouri on Saturday, I guess that could be a challenge. Really beyond that, I mean, the SEC thought it was doing Georgia a favor by giving it kind of a back-loaded schedule with some of its more easier games. As it turns out, these are not very interesting games now that the most consequential game has already been played and Georgia has lost. So if Georgia's level of focus is not very high, I'm not sure it necessarily gets exploited too much by some of the opponents that Georgia has to play the rest of the season.
Brandon, tell folks about Dog Nation Daily. I can't imagine that if you're a Georgia fan, you don't already know about it and subscribe to it and listen to it. But for those that may be hearing about it for the first time, what can they find on the Dog Nation Daily podcast and some of the other things you guys have going on?
Well, we love doing Dog Nation Daily every single day, and we do appreciate folks checking it out. You know, it's available on pretty much every platform. We do it as a podcast, so Apple, Google, Spotify, all that. You can find Dog Nation Daily, but we also stream it live on video every morning at 10 a.m. That's Facebook, that's YouTube, that's Twitter. So if you'll just basically go to whatever platform you like, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, the Apple Podcast Player, Spotify, wherever else, you can find Dog Nation Daily. We do it live every single day at 10 a.m. And of course, it's available on demand after that. We just appreciate folks checking us out, and we're having a good time. You know, there's a lot of big stuff coming up with recruiting on the way and Georgia fixing some of the problems that have been kind of identified the last couple of weeks. So there's still a lot for Georgia to do here over the course of the next few weeks, and we're obviously key to bring a lot of coverage of that. And it's good to get a chance to talk to you about it here today as well.
Brandon, appreciate it, man. Thank you. It's College Football Game Time podcast, and of course you can join myself, Randy McMichael, John Chuckery, Saturday mornings 9 to noon, College Football Game Time, talking plenty of college football, the SEC, Georgia, and across the country. Brandon's going to be with us on Saturday morning, so we'll talk a little bit more about those Georgia Bulldogs with Brandon. This has been the College Football Game Time podcast brought to you by ESOG Engineered Solutions of Georgia, a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll see you next week back here again on the College Football Game Time podcast. Have a great week and enjoy your college football Saturday.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.